Hump Day! Yeah!
Hi, my name is Mark. I'm the Prepper Guy, and this is a Prepper Guy podcast. In a world that's always changing and full of fear and confusion, and especially when it comes to prepping, I am a minimalist, and I like to be ready for anything that life may throw at us, whether it's bad, the end of the world, or just a flat tire on a deserted road.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Mark the Prepper Guy, and this is my anniversary episode. So you might be thinking to yourself, Mark, I've been listening to you for quite a while, and it's been way over a year, so aren't you a little late on your anniversary? Well, this is how I look at it, and that's just my way of looking at shit, so whatever. I started out with a goal of podcasting once a week, and for a while there I did that quite well. But as life happens and shit changes, I wasn't able to do that regularly. I kind of got discouraged. I felt like I was forcing bad content and trying to just say stuff. So I backed way off, and now I pretty much release an episode whenever it strikes me. And usually once I get over 1,000 downloads, then I figure it's about time I do another one. And so this is the 52nd episode, so therefore in my warped mind, that's 52 weeks, so that's a year. So anyway, it doesn't make sense, and it really doesn't matter. I just thought I'd do that because episode 52 would have been a year if I would have stayed on goal. And we can talk about goal setting and just how well that works out sometimes for people. My son said, he goes, goals are just a list of things that aren't going to happen. And that is kind of true sometimes. So anyway, if you've been sticking around for 52 episodes, totally thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate all the people that listen and put up with my ramblings, my occasional swearing, my dysfunctionality, and my minimalist way of looking at pretty much everything. But I'm in a pretty good mood today because I was just listening to Gary Vaynerchuk. I don't know if you've ever listened to him. He's the modern day Anthony Robbins. He just motivates me every time he opens his mouth. And he's an internet marketer. He owns VaynerMedia. And he started out just a kid from, I think, New Jersey, just a hustler from Russian immigrants. And he has a different way of looking at things. And I think for the most part, he is so dead on right all the time that it's amazing. And so I listen to him all the time. He never fails to inspire me, no matter what it is that he's talking about. I look at it and go, holy shit, that applies to this in my life. What I'm doing with my businesses or my websites or anything. So put me in a good mood. It's just awesome. So one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about, not only just this being my 52nd episode anniversary edition, was just kind of on the lines of what Gary was talking about. And he always says it. He goes, you know, you have to work. It's called work. And if you want to grow a successful business or a successful podcast or a successful marketing campaign, or anything, and probably you could macro that down and micro it down to marriage, life, raising children, you have to put in the time. So if you're just going to sit there and watch TV when you get home from a bad day at work and let the news wash over in, you know, for an hour or two and then watch your favorite episodes and DVR stuff, then that's 4 or 5 hours a day that you've missed out on, that you could have been working. And I don't mean working like a job. I mean working, Googling things, learning shit, figuring out how to tweak something, how to improve your relationship with your children or your wife or spouse. You know, it takes work. And we all understand the principles of working hard and what that means, but we don't like to apply it. We want to get into shape and we want to lose weight, and we understand that doing exercises might get us into better physical shape. Cutting back on certain foods or increasing certain foods might make us healthier, but we just don't want to do it. So that's what he means by just work. You know, if you have a question, he had a really good website you could go to get answers to these things. And he said, go to Google. And everyone laughed, and that is kind of funny. But, you know, you can Google that shit. And people ask me all the time, Mark, how did you learn how to do that? How did you learn how to build this or that in your workshop? And I'm always amazed because I just look at them and go, YouTube. I mean, knowledge is just out there. It's just being handed out for free. You don't have to go to some library and find some dusty old book and go through the card index and ask the crotchety old curmudgeon of a librarian, how do I find this book in the card catalog? And it's like, oh, you know, you just Google it. You just type in a word and Google. You know, I'm building a 72-inch belt grinder. So you Google it and you watch a ton of videos. And then as you're watching all these videos, and this is just how I do it, but, you know, you might have your own method of disseminating information. You know, the first 10, 20 videos I'm watching is just to get an understanding of the concept of what this thing does and what he's doing and how one way as opposed to another creates a different outcome of what I'm working on. And then I start watching ones that are more narrowed down, like how do you get the tracking wheel on there? And then once I understand what the tracking wheel is, then I start trying to figure out, how do I want it to look? How do I want it to act? Do I want a hydraulic spring, or do I want a funky ass spring? Or, you know, how do I want it to look? Because now I understand its function and how it works. And so, you know, I just tell people, I Google that shit. I watch YouTube videos until 2 a.m. on a project I'm working on. So I first lay down the groundwork of what it is that I'm building, how it functions, what it requires, and then you start fine-tuning it down to, you know, do I need, you know, half-inch plate steel, or can I use 3/8, or can I do this? And then the more you understand the principle of what it is and its function with that tool, you can go, oh, I don't need to use that thick of metal. All right, so as usual, my phone rang, which took me off track, and now I can't remember what I was talking about. So I know we were talking about building things and learning shit and how Gary Vaynerchuk keeps me in check. So that was what I kind of wanted to talk about as the theme of the podcast is on, you know, doing things, building things, and how it relates to being a prepper. And it may sound a little bit stupid, but we're all preppers. Everyone in the world is a prepper. I remember, you know, staying at my grandmother's house when I was young, and she always had her slippers right there by her bed, and then her book or whatever she was reading, and a night lamp. And so as I look back on it, you know, where her slippers were placed was pretty much a premeditated decision. That's being prepared, because she knew that if she had to get up in the middle of the night because the dog was barking or whatever, she would just set up, put her feet down, and they were always right there where her feet go, based on where she swirls out of bed. So she didn't need to turn the light on. They were right there, pretty much right when she stood up. Her feet went into the slippers. Now, they didn't have carpet back then and heated floors, so I'm sure it was more for just even if she got up to get a drink of water. You know, don't want to walk on cold floors. So that's being prepared. So we're all preppers on a very minute and simple level. You know, whether you're preparing to go to work the next day and you're making sure that you're grabbing that item that one of your coworkers said, make sure you bring that report. Make sure you fill out this due date. Make sure you've read the memo. That's all being prepared. As far as being a prepper, per se, that's a little different, but not really. You know, it's a mental list or a checklist or a group of items that you're going to need, whether it's for work or it's for camping or it's for a road trip or it's for the end of the world. There are certain things you need to pre-think about that will arise from what you're going to be doing. So that's being a prepper. And preppers that plan for end of the world scenarios, or SHTF, just take it to a different level. I'm not saying it's a more extreme level. It's just a different level than going to work. But if you're going to work and you're going to give a presentation, you better level up pretty high, because, you know, you're preparing for maybe a promotion or just a presentation that can cost the company a lot of money if you get your facts wrong. So you're just looking at a different direction of your life. You know, there's the work, and then if you turn to the left or the right, now you're looking at your children's basketball game, or you look to a little bit more, so you're 90 degrees over from, you know, and you look over and you go, I'm going camping or a road trip. And then these are things that you can pre-plan. So you need to take some time to look forward and go, what if I lost my job? What if the power went out forever? What if? You don't want it to any more than you probably wanted to give a presentation in front of, you know, 500 coworkers or even more. But that's the way it is. You're going to do it. So what do you know, what the hell? So you, as a prepper, you go, what would I need? And that's where it gets, to me, kind of fanatical sometimes, where people go, well, I need, you know, 50 cached food locations and 3 or 4 bug out retreats and all this. It's like, that's really great. I want to be prepared for any scenario. And so to be prepared for any scenario, there's going to be the basics, which is, you know, food, water, fire, shelter. And then the rest of it's going to kind of really be up to chance. You know, if you're going to come in contact with people, you can prepare for security and defense, or you can take my approach when I look at it. It's like, I don't want to be proactive in my security and defense. I just want to stay away from people during that chaotic stage. Because if there's looters coming to my house and I shoot some of them because I'm so damn proactive, and there's still a police force trying to maintain law and order, even in a terrible crisis situation, and it's been a year into, you know, a blackout, there's still communities, there's still rules. Even tribes would frown on some stranger coming in and hurting one of their own, even though that person might have deserved to, you know, been shot with an arrow because they attacked you. They're still going to take that other, their tribe member's side because you're the outsider. So I don't want to, you know, come in contact with people and be forced into being that guy that had to defend myself from a starving family where the husband or the father is looking at his children haven't eaten in, you know, days, which means he hasn't probably eaten in weeks, and we've discussed that. He's going to be desperate. He's going to be delirious. He could be on the verge of hallucinating and mental collapse. And so because I allowed myself to be seen, found out, or was cooking in an area where I didn't have my discipline right, where I was, you know, cooking on a, you know, on a smoke-filled fire instead of a different type of fire, and I was actually grilling meat instead of drying it, and now I've put myself out there. I was found out. And so now this person comes to me very legitimately starving, looking at the life and death of his family, and you give him attitude. He might, you know, just shoot you right then. He might be smart enough, and I don't mean that in a good way, where he just looks at you from, you know, a ways off and goes, oh, this guy's pretty armed. He looks like he's got some food. My kids are starving to death. My daughter's dying of pneumonia. I'm just going to shoot this guy and go get his stuff. I don't even want to ask him. So for me, being prepared in a security and a defensive method is more of just staying away from problems. Doesn't mean I'm a coward. I just know the reality of violence. You know, there's plenty of books on it from the military and field manuals on how you have to react in a violent situation, especially in a grid down world without rule of law thing, to where basically the rule is the first person that moves, you shoot them. Why? Because their movement means they're thinking. That means they have a plan. And I'm guaranteeing you that you are not part of a favorable outcome in their plan, because that's why they're confronting you. So you have to make those snap decisions, and you have to do it. We're talking nanoseconds. And if you hesitate, you're dead. He who hesitates is lost. The most committed wins. The same coin, just the other side. So I understand, and I know I'm perfectly capable of doing that. And then the good side of me on the other shoulder is telling me, you really wouldn't want to do that. I would do it, but I don't want to do it. So how do I avoid having to do that? I just stay the hell away from crazy people. And in my book, 99.9% of the people you come into contact in a bad situation are crazy people. They have not thought as much as you or I may have. So they don't care if they have to be that guy or that gal, because they're delirious, they're starving, they're crazy, they might be psychotic. Either way, they approached you. They infringed upon your space. They've already shown their intent. And since you don't know them, and it's not a block party, because you were not paying attention to your disciplines and what you're doing, you now have to defend yourself. And you may have to shoot somebody that was just there because their kids were starving. But you don't have the time to make that decision and fill out a questionnaire and see how their psyche is doing. So that is being prepared. Thinking through every possible thing way before it happens. And I talked about that in my book, Will You Survive an EMP? You know, there's groups of people you're going to come in contact with. There's individuals. And your best bet is going to be to stay away from them until stuff starts to mellow and simmer. You know, so that's why we prep and how we prep. And it should be. It's just a different angle of view of bad things happening. We all want to prepare for our trip to Disneyland, but what about the trip to the end of the world? So I look at it as food, water, fire, shelter, everything else in between are contingency plans. You know, I'm not going to worry about 10 pounds of this and 100 pounds of that and 10,000 rounds of this. And then, oh, well, shit, that's heavy. Where am I going to put it? I can't carry it no more in a bug out situation. So I should pre-position it. Oh, if I pre-position it, what if someone finds it? Well, then there's all these ways to pick a location and hide your stuff where no one sees you do it, because you do it over a 4 or 5 week period to where you scout it and then you go back and then you come in a different direction and then you find a place and then you leave and then you wait until the ideal moment to where no one could be watching you and you haven't established any patterns of travel. And then you go in, dig it up, bury it real quick and hide it and camouflage it and mark it and then get the hell out of there. That's a lot of work. So I'm way too lazy for that shit. So what am I going to do? I'm going to change my diet so I don't eat that stuff. Now I'm a meat eater. That's all I got to worry about. Finding some eggs in a nest, killing a bird or a rabbit and cooking it, jerking it. You know, if I can't cook it, then I'll dry it while I'm hiking. I'll eat it raw. And so I'm a meat eater. I don't need to now worry about how many pounds of wheat per person per day. So that's one thing off my checklist. I don't have to worry about that anymore. Water's always an interesting thing. You can't pack enough water unless it's just like a cute little day hike, you know, where you drive there and then you hike around and you look at the birds and then you drink your cute little sports bottle and then you go home. If you have to bug out, what are you going to take? 2 gallons per day per person and put it on your backpack and bug out and hope you get somewhere and don't die? No, you're not going to do that because it weighs too much. I'd rather have an extra gun and some more ammo and some dry stuff for shelter and things like that that will facilitate my water, my fire, my shelter, my food. So all those things can all be wrapped up into one neat little bundle now. Fire starter, ammo, an extra gun. I've reduced my pack weight by hundreds of pounds by not bringing in all this food with me. And so I might have 2 or 3 bags of jerky, which weigh absolutely nothing. And that will get me to wherever I'm going. I have a few MREs that don't weigh much to where on my way, I can at least eat and keep up my energy. But once I'm there, I'm not worried about planting food, irrigating, all that crap. I just settle in, make a safe, secure place somewhere where no one will see me, hear me, or know I'm there. And then I can set up snares. I can take my bow and get some food and then just wait the storm out. You know, it's to me, it's an umbrella. You know, people go, well, I have an umbrella in case it rains. And I tell people, well, when I'm prepping, I'm going to bug out. I'm not going to stay, fight, and defend my property when there's still rule of law to where I'll end up in jail, because that's just the way it is, because everyone's a victim except the person that, you know, pulled the trigger. You're the asshole. So I'm just going to leave. And my brother always tells me, he's like, well, you know, going up into the hills or going over there or down into the desert where you know where there's a nice place that's safe and there's some water, really isn't living. Being under an umbrella during a shitstorm or a rainstorm is no different. That's not living. You know, I don't want to, you know, live in a rainstorm all the time. So I look at it that way. It's like, no, that's not my life. It's my bug out. It's my fallback and my retreat. It's not living. That's not a life I want to live. I just want to live. So I will put that umbrella up because it's raining. I don't want to live under an umbrella in a rainstorm all the time. So people always go, well, that's no existence at all if you're just living in a cave and, you know, eating animals and sucking water out of a creek. No, it's not living. It's surviving. Living is coming home in my nice vehicle with the air conditioning on, shutting the door and going into my house and watching TV and doing some work and learning something and cooking my food on my grill. That's living. See, so don't get confused with that when you're prepping and people go, well, that's no life. You know, you don't want to have to live after shit hits the fan in a cave. No, I don't. I just want to live. So the cave and my bug out is the umbrella you pop up before you walk off your porch and run to your car kind of way. So that's why I'm a minimalist, is because it's staying alive day to day. So I master all those things as far as food, water, fire, shelter. And so that gets me back to what I wanted to really talk about on our anniversary issue, is making shit. I enjoy making stuff. So my wife asked me, why are you building a 72-inch bell grinder? Well, quite frankly, there is no reason. I don't make knives. I don't work with metal all that much. I have a workshop where I play around, and it would be much nicer to flip on a belt grinder to round off that bolt or whatever, but that's about it. So when I'm done, this will be a $500 or $600 belt grinder if I was to just buy a cheapy version. And it will have cost me, you know, $20-$30 plus the belts, but you can't add that in, because if you bought one for, you know, $1,000, you should still have to buy belts. So I like building it. So my next project will be a CNC plasma cutter. I came up with that idea because when I was cutting some of the stuff out of some 3/8 metal for the belt grinder, I was like, man, this sucks. And I was like, I need a plasma cutter, you know, because it took me like an hour and a half to cut this little thing out, and it looks like fairly close to hammered shit with a little polish on it. And I was like, boy, a plasma cutter out it, but that would have been fun. And I think plasma cutters are cool because they're like magic. And especially after running a grinder with a cutoff wheel on it for an hour. So I started thinking, plasma cutter. So then, you know, I go Google that shit. So I'm looking at plasma cutters, and then naturally I see a YouTube video on a CNC plasma cutter. And I thought that would be really cool if like I wanted to make some knives and I don't want to buy just some generic blanks, so I could cut out, you know, 10 or 15 of them with that thing. And I was like, okay, there's a purpose for this now. This is how my mind works. So does that make sense to most people? But if you're a guy that likes cool toys and thinks that CNC machines are just the ultimate cool-ass ginormous printer for a guy, they are. And so I thought, well, here's some things I could do with it now. So it's like, okay. So then I go, I'm going to build one. So I priced them out, and they're, you know, like for a a decent plasma cutter CNC thing, like it's just about 4 foot by 4 foot cutting surface, are about $20,000 if you go buy a new one, you know, from like some Lincoln Electric or Torchmade or whatever. And then some of them are way less, like, you know, $12,000. Wow. So for a random screwball idea, I'm not going to spend $12,000 for something I will probably only use two or three times before I die. So I start watching YouTube videos, and it's like just one guy, his channel is Absorbed by Light, just a really cool guy, and he's a welder, so he, you know, he's doing it. And he builds this CNC plasma thing. Now, he uses the stuff he has, so it ends up being maybe like a 3 foot by 3 foot cutting surface, but that, you know, doesn't really matter how big it is because the software doesn't care. And so he builds it, and it's really sweet, and he uses, you know, all these, you know, like roller skateboard wheels and bearings and stuff, and he's just kind of like, he kind of just Frankensteins this thing out of his mind onto his workbench, and then after about the fourth video, he goes, well, let's see how much I paid for this. Now, this thing does the same shit that a $30,000 Torchmate will do, unless you're into, you know, manufacturing, then you might want a little bit more durability and reliability than skateboard wheels. But for what he would use it for and what I would use something like that for, it's basically overkill. So he adds it all up and he's joking around with it. And he's like, oh, yeah, these were really expensive. They were $10 and stuff. So the entire build cost him $300, $290-some. And I'm like, holy shit. Now that's a number I can swallow, because over, let's say it took me a month or two to build it. That's, you know, it's like $50-$60 here, $100 there. I already got a lot of this stuff, so I'm ahead of the game there. You know, and then the motors, and then most of the software, you know, for the Arduinos are, you know, is free or, you know, damn near it. So it's like that I could do that. I wouldn't feel bad for spending $300 for this thing. And then if I never use it again, what the hell do I care? So even my wife's like, you're going to build a what? And so I showed her some videos, and she's like, oh, those are really cool. Why do you need one? I go, I don't. I would probably never need that, but I want to build it. See, that to me is, I would rather spend a month learning and building a CNC machine that I will never use, as opposed to spending a month and $300 playing golf that at the end of the day, I have nothing to show for it other than a scorecard. Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah, your handicap's coming down. Yeah? So what? You know, what do I have for it? You know, the some people that were working on our landscaping, you know, because we had these big trees that were just effed up huge, and they were falling down and being stupid. So, you know, the guy, you know, he cut them all down and back, and then hauled them back to where I keep all my crap that I don't know what to do with. These big logs, and it kind of cleaned up, and that was, I don't know, $3,000-$4,000. Now there's, you know, 10 big trees, so it's not like he didn't earn his keep. And then he's like, well, I can get all those stumps out of the ground and do all this and do all that, and then it'll be all smooth, which is an eyesore for my wife. She would love that to happen. And he's like, you know, probably 7,000. And he goes, but you know what? He likes my big one-ton Ford that I never drive, but it's paid for, so I like it too. It's four-wheel drive, F4 350, you know, four-door. So it's just a big-ass cool truck, and it's paid for. So it looks really nice because that there's no dollar bills going into it. And he goes, I'll trade you that and $1,000. And my wife's like, you know, kind of mad at me because I'm like, there's no effing way that will ever happen. And here's why. Because I need the stumps removed. But after I give him my money and my truck, what do I have to show for it? 10 holes in the ground. Oh, what the hell is that? I can't eat it. I don't want it. I'm not going to spend that kind of money. So we put, you know, $7,000 towards a small tractor that I can do all kinds of fun shit with. And it will probably take me a year to dig around them because it's not a huge tractor. It's not like one of those ones on Gold Rush where I could just push them off the property. You know, I got to dig. It's a 1 foot bucket. It's a little LS brand tractor made by New Holland. So it's nice. And so that money is going to something that when I'm done with my 10 holes in the ground, I still have a tractor. The other deal, I would not have had my money and my truck. But hey, I got some holes in the ground. Ah, freaking sweet is that? Not at all. So when my brother and my wife are like, why are you going to build that? Because I want to build that. Not because when I'm done, I want it. I want to do it. I want to be challenged. I want to learn how to do the tree removal. I want to learn how to prune big trees. I want to learn how to build a belt grinder. I want to make one knife. So I'm building a 72-inch belt grinder. I'll probably never make that knife. So I'm not a knife maker. But in thinking that I might build one, so I built a 72-inch belt grinder, I've learned how to etch metal. And so that came in handy when our big older dog passed away. I etched a really nice tombstone out of a piece of plate steel. And it's got his picture on it because I learned how to do that. And then I said, well, I need a vinyl cutter to do this etching. $100. I got a vinyl etcher cutter now. 160 or whatever it was. And then I can make stickers too. So it's all about the doing, the learning. That's the fun. So Google that shit. So prepping is all of that because now I know how to weld metal because I have a welder. Because I wanted to do something. If I would have paid someone to do that something, I would have spent more than what the welder cost me. And when I was all said and done, I wouldn't have a welder. I would have whatever I built with it, but I have that now. I just didn't pay somebody for their welder to take it home at the end of the day. It's my welder now. I bought a $1,600 sawmill one time because I wanted to build some shit out of all these dead trees that we had to pay money to get cut down. Well, I'm saving them logs. What have I done with it? I've built some cabinets. I've built a big picnic table. I played around, had a shit ton of fun, and I have a sawmill. See, it's, you know, that's the thing. So I have learned how to use that sawmill by watching thousands of YouTube videos on how to use that machine, how to do it. Now I have a tractor that I can pick up those heavy-ass logs and put them on my sawmill. So now I have two things that are helping me. But the underlying thing is, it's like, I know how to use them. So everything you do should adapt to other things you will do in life. So if you're Joe or Jane Doe, that has a job and, you know, you're happy with that job and you have a family and you're happy with that and all that. And you're thinking, I need to add some color and variety to my life. And I kind of worry about economic collapse and all that. So I'm going to become a prepper. You don't just run out and buy a shit ton of food storage. You learn stuff. You learn how to eat right. That knowledge carries over to other things. But you know how to garden if you're going to be into gardening. Learn how to garden. Build a garden, till up your ground, learn how to compost. And though you might only get one tomato a year off the damn plant, you know how to do it. So if you're in a situation where you need to grow some food over the summer because that's your diet, then you know how to do it. Now you're prepped. You have a skill. It can't be taken from you. The NSA can't come in and wiretap your skills and then go send the IRS, come and take them. They're yours. You can give your skills to all your kids and grandkids until the day you die, and you still have just as many of them when you die. They don't diminish. So learning a skill has the greatest return on investment ever because it never goes away. It never diminishes. It never depreciates. And no matter how many times you share it, give it away, or sell it, you still have it. Kind of like perpetual motion, really. So I want to urge you all to challenge yourself, to do things that, you know, maybe are different, like Gary Vee says, put in the work for your life and do it in a way to where instead of spending 10 hours a week perfecting your backhand or your slice or whatever the hell it is you do, spend that on something that at the end, you have something to show for it. Yeah, you're a good golfer. Whoopty shit. Unless you're a pro, it really isn't going to line your pockets with anything. It's costing you. It's an expense.
Whereas if I build even though I don't have a plasma cutter, so when I build this CNC machine, not only does it give me an excuse to buy a plasma cutter, so it might cost me $1,000, maybe $2,000, let's say, over a year, because I'm not in a big hurry to build it because I really don't have a use for it. At the end of that $2,000, let's say it takes me a year, that's $130 a month, which people spend on going to the gym, or they spend it on, you know, going to the movies or stupid entertainment or golfing or racquetball or whatever the hell your hobby is. At the end of that year, all you have to show for that money you spent was you're a better golfer. If you're a golf pro, that's important. If you're Joe Blow and you play golf with the boss and you're hobnobbing, that's kind of important. But if you're just you or me, an average guy, that is, I would rather have a CNC plasma cutter because I still spent the same time and same money. But at the end of all of it, I'm not a better golfer. I have a $20,000 piece of equipment that I built. And if God forbid I lose my job, or I get hurt, or I get too old to do what I do, and I've learned how to use that CNC machine, and I've networked with friends that I know that are knife makers, and then they give me all of their drawings for their knives that they use, and once a month I cut out, you know, 10 blanks for them, and I make a little extra money. Now that machine has actually become a second or third or fourth kind of revenue stream for me. It's not the end of the world kind of crazy mad money like I got FU money like Bill Gates. No, it's just, it's something that when I'm doing my time and you're out playing golf, I spend the same amount of time. And when I'm done, somebody goes, that really turned out sweet. Here's the $100 I told you about. And I made money on the same investment that I did 5 years ago when I built the CNC machine or whatever. So what else do I get out of it? I've learned how to do things that are up and coming technologies. You know, CNC and plasma and manufacturing is a skill that is always valuable. I have generators and solar generators and ways to produce electricity to where if the world ended, I can fire that bad boy up and make somebody a sword. The local blacksmith go, you cut these blanks and I'll make swords, and then we can arm our army. And I will, you know, my wife is raised this dairy cow, so you'll always have plenty of milk and meat and cheese and eggs. And it's like, sweet, we have a deal. So it's a step in the right direction. And I know I'm kind of rambling, but I'm trying to get people to understand. It's like, if you look at what it is you're doing right now with your time and your money and your effort, and it's being spent on things that you enjoy. I'm not saying people don't enjoy hiking or golfing or going to the gym or doing all these things, but that, what is your return on investment? And if you're a prepper that is looking toward that angle of what happens if, and we're not talking about zombies, we're just talking about you have an accident riding your dirt bike because that's your hobby. It's cost you a shit ton of money, and now you just got hurt, and you won't be able to go to work for 3 months until therapy's over. And the company you work for, they're like, ah, it's really sweet. Sucks to be you, but we have to replace you. And by the way, there are no insurance policies that are going to pay you a ton of money the rest of your life because that's just not how it really is in the real world. So now what are you going to do? So now that is the end of the world as you know it. That is Teotwaki for you at that moment. And so every decision you make is now you're basically trying to protect your family from bankruptcy, starvation, loss of school or college. You might have to get rid of one of your cars so your daughter has to take a bus and you don't feel that safe. See,
It's all about protecting your family, feeding and providing for your family, whether you're out scrounging roots or shooting rabbits because the world has ended, or you screwed yourself up so bad you lost your job. And your wife had to quit because you're so screwed up you can't take care of yourself for the first 6 months. So she had to stay home with you. Yeah, family's great. They're all coming, pitching in and helping. But at the end of the day, you still have bills that need to be paid. All of those things you've been spending your last 5 years on, learning to be a better motocross rider, but you're not a professional. No one even cares and knows you're alive. You just enjoy it. You could have been doing something maybe that would have had a higher return on investment. And that becomes a skill that you can pass on until the day you die. It will always transfer over to survival if you pick the right things to do. You have to analyze your life. You have to look and go, boy, what do I do? See, I enjoy building shit. So people go, oh, that's a really nice guest house you built. And I got a YouTube video of it. And people go, oh, do you use that a lot? It's a sweet-ass guest house. It's like, no, not at all. I don't ever use it because my house is bigger. I have family that come once in a blue moon and use it. But that's, you know, it's not like a big deal. But I learned to build. I learned structural things. I learned electrical things. I learned working with PEX. I learned, plumbing, sewer, roofing, windows, waterproofing, water abatement, house wrap, the railings. You know, it's like, my wife's like, oh, those railings with sticks look really cool. All right, I learned to do that. You don't think any of that would transfer over to me building a shelter if the world ended? Oh, hell yes. Not only would I know how to build my shelter, a debris shelter, a hut shelter, a stone shelter, I know how to put a fireplace in it. I know how to put running water in it. And so it is a transferable skill. And I enjoyed the shit out of building it. It improved my property value. It's an asset and it doesn't get used that much, but I enjoy doing it. And see, that's how my wife gets me to do all these projects, because she finds things that she knows I will enjoy doing. And then I go, oh, you know, that's going to require a welder. And then I justifiably go out and spend $800 on a really nice welder. It would have cost more than that to have what she wanted done. I had to watch a ton of videos to learn how to kind of weld good enough for what we were doing. But that's now a skill. I know how to do it. And so she knows that if the because I'm a guy, I don't get paid. this is honeydew shit. So I make sure all my honeydews are things that I want to do. I'm going to learn for. They are transferable into a survival situation. The skills are all good. And she knows that if she really wants me to do this big project, it's going to cost her a tool, because I will analyze it until I figure out, I need a compound miter chop saw. She's like, what the hell do you need that for? It's like, I just do. I'm not going to cut all those 2x4s by hand. Well, you got a skill saw. Yeah, it's not the same. Okay, go ahead and buy it. You know, we're already spending $20,000 on this thing. What's it? It's, you know, $300 sliding miter saw. That's really kind of a small part of it when you think about it, honey. But I need it. And so I get paid. Now I have cool tools. So next time I want to build something, I have to push her in the direction of buying something else for me. Because let's face facts, I got to get paid for my shit. So I hope that this kind of helps you understand that what this whole year or 52 episodes has been about is, even though I am the prepper guy, I talk about nutrition, I talk about politics, I talk about everything. And if you really look at it and think about it, it's all about being prepared for something. And if you do it right to where it's transferable to other things, then you get 2 for 1, basically, maybe even 3 for 1 out of what you're doing with your time. Gary Vee talks about it all the time. You got to put in the time. While people in your business or your competition are going home and watching House of Cards or Homeland or the news or whatever it is, you could be getting a better advantage on your competition by just doing 2 extra hours of work at home, learning something that puts you 10% ahead of that jackal down the street that doesn't know what the hell he's doing, but he opened a business and now he's taking market share from you. And how he's doing it is maybe using HomeAdvisor and Angie's List. Where over the last years of your business, why weren't you reaching out and talking to your customers? Why weren't you putting a face on what you do? Why weren't you becoming the man or woman in your community that if anybody wants the service you offer, they had better talk to you? Then you don't need Angie's List. You don't need HomeAdvisor out there, you know, whoring your services. They're your customers anyway. They're just charging you to have them call you. So you need to, you know, step it up. And that's prepping, because it's all knowledge. And knowledge can always be used and adapted to something else. I know how to build. Therefore, I could build a stick shelter. I can build a bridge. If I need to build a suspension bridge across a canyon, I can do that. I can take my toolbox of garbage in my head and figure a way to build a suspension bridge. I can MacGyver that shit because I've done so many other things similar to it that it will work on that, because I understand engineering to a point. I understand stress loads. I understand which way to drive a spike into the ground to where it will hold against the wind. Not because I'm smart. It's just because I looked at it and figured it out. And then if I'm not sure, I Google that shit and I find out, yep, you're right. That's the way to do it. Sweet. Done. Don't ever have to look that up again. So welding will transfer over, because if it's the end of the world and I'm bugging out and the leaf spring shackle on my bug out vehicle breaks, I know how to grab wires and weld right off of my battery because I know how to weld. Will it look pretty? No. Will I get the shit shocked out of me if I do something wrong? Sure. Do I give a crap? No. I just want my shackle back on so I can get the hell down the road. Pick something like, you know, hunting. I'm not a hunter. I really have never spent any time out trapping, hunting. I've watched so many videos on it that I totally understand the concept, but that's just book smart. But if you're able to watch enough of it and get into their head and what the mountain man is talking about, all of a sudden you start going, oh, I see why he's doing that. I understand how he's doing that. So now all the programming is in the muscle memory. I've just never used it. But it makes swinging that hammer the first time until you get your eye-hand coordination working right 10 times faster, because you understand the physics, the motion, the inertia, the driving force behind that hammer. And therefore, you understand where to grab it, how to hold it, how to swing it. Where on the nail do you stare at? Because it's eye-hand coordination. If you look at where the nail is going into the board, you're going to bend that nail. If you're looking straight at the head of that nail and you're pounding the shit out of it, you're not going to miss after about 3 or 4 times. So it becomes instinctive because you've done most of the pre-wiring of all your memories and stuff, muscle memory and learning, ahead of time. So they call that like pre-learning. Like parents have shown and proven in studies that if they read to their baby in the womb and then they continue to read and teach the baby as it's growing up, when it picks up a book, learning how to read becomes 100 times faster than somebody that's never been read to. They don't pick up the language as fast, any of that. So you're just pre-learning, because we can't learn everything. Jesus, there's just a shit ton of stuff to learn. But you learn the important things: fire, water, food, shelter. And that applies to everything, because if you hurt yourself, you're still going to need heat in your house, water coming through them pipes, food in your refrigerator, and shelter over your roof. You're going to still need to provide that, whether it's on a basic camping level or your home. And so those are the important things. And so if you learn how to do it, if the electric company says, we're turning your power off because you didn't pay the bill, you're like, that's cool, because I built a solar generator and I can run my house at 10%. So I'll still have lights. I'll charge my cell phone. I'll still be able to watch stuff on the internet, on YouTube, because it'll all be working. And my refrigerator will work. because you did that. You learned it. You never hoped you would ever have to need it. But now that you need it, you can do it. They turn off your electricity because you're all screwed up and they have no compassion. They don't give a shit. All of a sudden, you're still fine. Your lights still come on. You might find it to be so damn thrilling and exciting that you actually run your whole house on solar like my brother does, because he just loves solar. He thinks it's just free shit, and it is. So over the last 10 years, he's built his big solar array and all that, and everything in his house works off of that solar except his air conditioner, because he just enjoyed it. But he learned it from scratch. So you look at your life and you go, something bad could happen. Fire, water, food, shelter. Don't die. That's the rule. So you're prepping every day of your life. You're prepping for work, or you're prepping for school, or you're prepping for the first date, or you're prepping for learning how to dance at your first prom, all the way up to where you're prepping for a big promotion. You're prepping. And you're just looking at different possible future events. You might have been prepping for your promotion 2 years before that ever became a subject matter. But you knew in the back of your mind that that opening was going to open up and you wanted to be ready for it, because luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. So they'll sit there and go, well, you're really lucky you fell into that job. It's like, yeah, because I was ready for it and I prepared for it. So then all of a sudden, when the world hiccups and belches out a solar flare that shuts off all our power grid, you'll be ready. You hope it never happens, but you'll be ready. You'll go, oh, that's all right. It's like living in the 1800s. Shit, man, they still had law and order. They still had food. They had water. It wasn't so coming out of the pipes so freely as it does today. So you're not going to die when all this shit happens, unless you're just a moron. You know, so you're prepared. And that's what being a prepper is. That's why I'm a minimalist. I'm not a minimalist in my skills or my knowledge or my abilities. I'm just a minimalist about how diverse I carry that out. So I know everything about nutrition and health that I need to know. I've tested it. I've tried it. It works for me. I've found all the medical research. There's thousands of published peer review things on low carb, high fat diet. And I just, that's, you know, there's empirical evidence right there. Cavemen didn't have Walmart. So I'm sure they didn't drink smoothies every day. So they probably ate woolly mammoth 99.9% of the time. So I guess I'm a meat eater. Read it, learned it, studied it, tried it, found the results to be phenomenal. End of story. That's done. So I'm not a minimalist as far as that. I'm just telling people, as a minimalist, you don't have to freak the hell out all the time about everything. You don't need gas masks, biohazard, bullets, ammo, guns, bows, arrows, boots, everything for every member of your family, just in case we get hit with a biological disaster. Because if that doesn't happen, then you got all them zoot suits that you're never going to wear. You're like, well, that was stupid. And so just be prepared for anything whatsoever. And then make sure you know your shit about fire, water, food, and shelter. And then you won't die. And that's the first rule of survival. Don't die. I still got some battery left in my thing, so I'm going to shorten all this down, plug with a commercial, and then come back and talk about something else. But I don't know what it'll be.
Our online store, DoomsdayDepot.com, that's Doomsday with a Z as in Zoom, lets you zoom into products selected by a prepper for preppers. Don't get lost looking for the supplies you need. Find them and great values, too, at our online store. And you can always learn more at theprepperguy.com, too.
All right, well, thanks for sticking with me this long. We talked about the anniversary. We talked about learning shit, why you should do stuff and do like Gary Vee says and just put in the time, work. But being so damn lazy, and how I think that applies to being prepared. And there were some other subjects I wanted to talk about, but I, you know, as time goes on, I'll be watching something, and then I'll go, oh, I need to talk about that, and then I won't write it down because I'm an idiot, and then the next thing will come up, and I'll create this whole scenario in my head and how to talk about it and how to think about it, and how I want to podcast about it, and then I forget to write it down. So maybe I should learn to do that. you know, be a little more organized. I was watching quite a bit of news lately and Googling it and YouTubing it and watching it on TV because my wife's a news junkie and so am I. And I look at it from a different perspective because I look at it as if there's ever a need that will ever arise, why I will be thankful I'm a prepper and prepared for the end of the world. It will be because of some ass clown in Washington that totally just threw a wrench in what was once a great and functioning and vibrant society, economy, whatever, you pick it. So I watch it from a different perspective because I look at everything as a spectator prepared to jump off the bleachers and get the hell out of there because I see that there's rumbling and there's an earthquake. So I watch it that way, and I learn from people like Chris Ann Hall and Liberty First, the 10th Amendment Center, CSPOA, which is Constitutional Sheriff and Police Officers Association, Sheriff Mack, that used to be the Graham County Sheriff here in Arizona. And there's a few places where I will go to really get what I feel is the best bang for my buck as far as knowledge, because the 10th Amendment Center is right on the money with nullification and all that. Chris Ann Hall is a constitutional lawyer, and she strips shit down right to the basic, you know, let's talk about the Constitution, because that is the governing contract of America and how we function. And then there's, you know, Sheriff Clark and Mack and these guys that are part of the CSPOA. Oath Keepers are all right. But there's just very few people I really go to for how I will disseminate the shit news that I just watched, which is like, oh my God, what the hell's going on? And, you know, and I like Trump. I do. As a candidate, he was bold and brazen and a guerrilla marketer when it came to getting his message out there, and he still is. I think it's funny now that all of a sudden the other side of the argument, to me anyway, have always been the media and the liberals that are like, you know, didn't believe in states' rights, didn't believe in secession, didn't believe in the actual three bodies of government, you know, the House and the judicial and the executive. That's just silly old outdated shit. Now that they hate Trump, all of a sudden they're like, well, we can secede from, you know, California can secede. All of a sudden now there's nullification. Now all of a sudden now they believe in the Constitution, which is a good thing. Unfortunately, they're doing it all for the wrong reasons. But at least now the media is going, well, you know, that whole Civil War thing really didn't make it impossible for states to secede. Well, of course it didn't, because the Constitution is not a suicide pact. We created the federal government, not the other way around. If we choose to walk away, we can. You know why? Because all the power is reserved to the states and then to the people, which means all the power is always on the people. No matter how cool the car is, we got our foot on the brake and the gas. F them. Now, all of a sudden, they're starting to go, oh, wait a minute. There's something to this whole state rights thing because we don't like Trump. Well, whatever your motivation is, welcome to the party. Glad you finally opened your freaking eyes. And now they can use it to fight Trump. And it used to kind of bother me. But, you know, when I really look at the powers of the president, you know, they would like Trump to mend all wounds, and that's not his job. But, you know, back when Obama was the president, that he's the commander-in-chief. That's it. He's the commander-in-chief. Well, we're not at war. Doesn't matter. War Powers Act. War Powers Act. War Powers Act. And now that it's Trump and they don't like him, they're like, well, he's not really commander-in-chief unless there's a declaration of war by Congress. Oh, what about the War Powers Act? Well, you know, constitutionally, that doesn't hold water. Oh, well, glad you finally woke the hell up. You know, but you know, when it was Obama, that's fine. Executive orders are great. Trump does it. Executive orders are crazy. Well, they are. Executive orders are used for the president to enforce the law of the land, the constitutional law of the land, not just every willy-nilly law of the land. So, you know, he's doing it, you know, righter than Obama ever did, because Obama tried to use executive orders to actually write law, which is unconstitutional. They never brought that up in the media back then because they're like, that's Obama. He's our golden goose. Shut up. Don't worry about it. Obama. Let me kiss your feet there. But now that it's Trump, they're like, no. He can't do that. He can do this, but he can't do that. See, Obama could, you know, do a travel ban on 7 countries and no one gave a shit. Trump does the same travel ban, same wording, same everything, basically just reinstating Obama's travel ban. And they're like, you can't do that. You're a racist. You hate Muslims. Come on, Obama was part of the Muslim Brotherhood, and he even did that shit. So they're starting to wake up to the fact that the president has limited authority. The president of the United States is not the leader of America. He's a representative of the states. So that means when he goes off on his world tour and negotiates treaties and stuff, he's representing the states, Congress. Not you. That's why he's elected by the Electoral College, not the popular vote. Because he's not the leader of America. He's a representative of 50 states. He goes out there and says, these 50 states want us to do this. And we'd like to work with you. And we think you'd be a cool ally. Can we make something cool together? Yeah, all right. We'll buy that from you and you buy this from us. Okay, cool. We got a deal. Handshake. Takes it back to Congress and the Senate, and then they write a treaty, and then it is or passed or whatever, and by, you know, the Senate, and then it becomes law, and then now as the president he can sit there and enforce that law as long as it's constitutional. So that's his whole job, which is good, because America as a whole, no matter what party you're in, needs to understand that there is a circle around the president and he can only do certain shit. And once we figure that out, then everything's better. So it's awesome that the media, the mainstream bunch of douchebags, are finally waking up to the fact that there are states' rights, there are constitutional limitations on our leaders, especially if they're Republican, and there's limitations. About time. I mean, I couldn't be happier that everybody has now woken up and smelled the coffee and is starting to look at it. Unfortunately, they will take it in a wrong direction. You know, they want to teach a guy to fish, not so he gets fed, but because then they can force him to be a better fisherman, and then force him into buying a boat, and then force him into becoming a big fisherman, and then they can tax the shit out of him, then they can regulate him, and then they can tell him what to do because now they have power over him. But for now, we'll take baby steps. It's nice that the media is learning that there are constitutional limitations to what our leaders can and cannot do. And so that's a good thing. Now, this whole Obamacare, Trumpcare, Ryancare, whatever the shit you want to call that trash heap, that was interesting because all of a sudden, you know, after 7 years of Republican Congress and Senate going, this is an atrocity. It's a violation of your rights. Justice Roberts was wrong and blah, blah, and damn it. Then all of a sudden Trump's like, well, let's fix it. And they're like, I can't do that. You know, it's like, where the hell were you for the last 7 years, you jackasses? Oh, you were just playing politics just on the other side. See, you were just serving the ball back and forth, but there were never any game points because you were just dicking around with my time and my money as an American. Then all of a sudden when they're called up, you know, to perform, they get performance anxiety, and then they go soft. Sorry about that crude comment, but, you know, it's like what? We tried to, but, you know, Obama kept shutting us down. It's like, of course he did. Because he's the one that wrote the thing. So did you have a plan? Well, of course we had a plan. We had a 14.5-step plan. Obama wouldn't support us. It's like, well, hey, now you got the president, Congress, and the Senate. What's are we going to move forward to that plan? Well, We need to rethink it because, see, once we eliminate it, then all of our slush funds go away and our lobbyists aren't really happy. And you know what? We're just as crooked as those fucks on the other side. We just pretend that we care about these people on this side. But in all reality, we really don't care. This isn't like the Super Bowl where we have a team. We're just getting paid from concessions on both sides of the stadium. So that needs to be changed, but it won't because, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but a lot of people in America just don't understand of the damage that time in history has done to the Constitution. Just like I talked about in my last episode, you know, don't judge the Constitution by its lack of maintenance. The Constitution was kick-ass awesome. All the asshats that effed it up were not so awesome. So now we can't change it. But I think it's nice to watch at least the media and the left point out that there are constitutional limitations. Because see, if you're a thinker and you look at it, you go, well, wait a minute. I don't really care that they did that to Trump and not Obama. What I'm picking up from what you're pitching is that this has been wrong for the last 80 years. Media will never sit there and go, yeah, that's right. You know, FDR was wrong. No, they won't do that. They won't tell you the next step in your evolutionary learning cycle, but they will point it out. And if you're a thinker, you'll pick up on that and go, oh, so yeah. Right. Trump is wrong. Obama was right. Okay, fine, whatever. So what you're telling me is these rules have been in existence forever. It's just you asshats chose to ignore them when your guy was in, but now you want to point it out. And thank you for pointing it out, because even though you were shooting at me, you gave away your position. So it's a good thing. It really is a good thing if we as Americans apply it. Now, we won't, and that's why we're preppers, because something's going to happen. I mean, yeah, that's face facts. No matter how good the stock market is, everything's great. Ah, oh, it's a Trump bounce. Yay. This is cool. Well, you know what? In 06, 07, and 08, I thought business was cool because people were flipping houses left and right, and they were walking in my store going, give me 2,000 feet of that tile, and I don't care what color it is. Oh, it's stock. Yeah, pink's good. And I don't care about the grout. I don't care about the labor. I don't care about the price. Boom. I was selling two jobs a week. And we were doing good work, but they didn't care. Because then as soon as it was done, they'd slap a coat of paint on it, sell it for $30,000 more than they paid for it, pocket a bunch of money, go buy a new truck, and then do it again. We were retiling houses within that four-year period, maybe twice, same house. Because somebody else bought it and go, I don't like that tile. Oh, what would you like? Oh, it doesn't matter. I'm just flipping the house, but I don't like that color. Oh, okay. So everything was great. That was awesome. What a bounce. This is cool. Yeah, right up until it's not. So then it crashed and everything sucked. And it's just still kind of getting out of the sucking stage. Even though the last administration say, well, we really dodged a bullet. No, we got shot straight through the eyes. But, you know, we're vampires, so we didn't die. But we didn't dodge shit. And so this whole economy thing and everything, you know, with the stock market is great. It's a bubble. And with all bubbles, they pop. We learned that in second, third grade when we were blowing bubbles. And, you know, a big old bubble gum thing and then pop and it'd stick all over your face and shit and everyone laughing. It was funny. This won't be funny. So it will be the housing market. This time it'll just be the stock market and the bond market, which in theory will suck even worse. So like, you know, 07, 08, we got a really bad paper cut. Oh, no, actually, we cut ourselves with a razor blade, and we almost bled out. This will be a chainsaw accident. You will lose a freaking leg, figuratively speaking, you know. So we need to always be vigilant, always be prepared, always be watching. You can't change it. I mean, you could write Trump and go, hey, Trump, you know, if you did this, this would be awesome. And then everybody would be happy, and you'd create world peace and feed everyone on the planet. And then he'd read that and go, that's great. And he'd hand it to Washington and Congress and they'd all do it. It's not going to happen. It's not even going to happen in your small town. Your homeowners association don't even listen to you. So it's going to continue on its merry path. And as long as you're buckled in and you're paying attention, you'll be okay. And if you're prepared for disaster,
shit hitting the fan,
total
economic collapse. If it was bad enough to where our economy fell so on its face or like an EMP, and I would hope if there was an EMP by one of our enemies that America's military is smart enough to just EMP the whole planet, because otherwise all of our enemies would just fly over there with their planes and take our shit. So if my house, the lights are out, I want the whole neighborhood's lights out. In fact, I want the whole planet's lights out, because I don't like anybody on the planet having power when we don't, because they'll come in and take our shit. So let's at least reset the playing field. But that probably won't happen either. So you just have to be ready. So getting back to the first point, second point, and all the other points in the last 52 episodes, be observant. Be prepared. Don't be a fanatic. Don't be that guy running around worrying. Don't be that guy that's, you know, joins a militia to just, you know, learn how to tactically do this and that, because there's just so many reasons. Don't. If you're well prepared and you have military background and you want to get some training and you want to learn and you have a group in your town and you want to join a small militia and, you know, and do that, that's cool. But don't just make that your, man, I gotta go join this and do that and raise hell and I'm going to be a badass. It's like, you know what? Join the military. You want to do that shit, you know, and if you were in the military, then you don't want to do that shit. You've already done that shit and you know it sucks. You might join to help out and train others. But if somebody wants to be a diehard killing machine, gung-ho, balls to the wall, warrior of the end of the world, go, just join the military. It's free. They'll pay you and they'll give you all the cool shit to do it with. But so that was a tangent and a half. Just take, you know, everything with a little bit of skepticism and look at it. And you watch the news, filter it. You listen to people talk on Facebook, filter it. And through that filter, you should capture certain things. Like, you know, is it writing on the wall? Is it viable threat? Is it something that could happen? Could my money be at jeopardy? Could my family be at jeopardy? Could my job and my safety be at jeopardy? And that's what you watch for. You just watch for signals. Watch for chatter that could affect your life. And then just be ready for everything, which sounds complicated coming from a minimalist. But when it comes to being ready, I want to be ready for everything. So I'm minimal, but not in my concerns for what could happen, because I believe everything could happen, because one thing triggers another.
Well, I want to thank you for tuning in and listening to this show. I hope I brought something to the table for you all. As always, go to prepperguy.com, read the show notes, and run over to YouTube. Check out my channel. Every once in a while, I'll have a video out there, and sometimes I do the whole episode as a video. And then also, for all your prepper needs, go to doomsdaydepot.com. That's doomsdaydepot.com for any end-of-the-world supplies you may need. Other than that, I hope you have a great week, and we will talk to you later. As always, enjoy the apocalypse.